Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Monday, September 11, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Rescuers race against time to find survivors days after Morocco's earthquake.
In the region of Marrakech, it's a village where there is some victim here. All the people of this village is sleeping outdoors.
Gabon's new prime minister forms a transitional government. We'll speak with the justice minister. Peace Corps volunteers return to Malawi after the vaccination, after evacuation for COVID-19. African leaders discuss combating food insecurity. Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown, is militarized amid rumors of a protest today, Monday.
The first and foremost thing that we have to do as a state is to reassure our citizens that this time we take any calls of such nature extremely seriously and that our security forces are under full and complete control.
And remembering the late Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi of South Africa, those stories plus Samson Omalley's Pulse are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The government of Morocco said Sunday that at least 2,122 people were killed and more than 2,421 injured, many critically from Friday's 6.8 magnitude earthquake. This as the country's rescuers tried to save those trapped under the rubble. Emmanuel Victoire Ngapila is a freelance journalist in the village of Moulay Ibrahim, about 31 miles from Marrakech City. He tells me that what the people need the most are tents.
In the region of Marrakech, it's a village where there is some victim here.
How would you describe the devastation in the village?
All the people of this village is sleeping outdoor, and there is no stand to sleep. And it's very complicated for them because there is many women and young girls who sleep outside.
Do you see rescue teams, people trying to look for survivors?
Yeah. Right now, when I'm speaking to you, there is a rescue team who is searching 3% in the village who not respond call of their family. There is a rescue team working still now.
How are the people surviving in terms of, you say they are sleeping outside. I mean, how would you describe the condition? Weather, is it cold or what?
The weather is pretty. It's like right now there is 29 degrees. So we have a good time now. In the night, it will be complicated to sleep outside because the temperature will go down like 10 or 11 degrees.
When you talk to the people, what do they need the most?
The most need is the stand. Because food, there is many people who came from Marrakech and other cities provide a lot of food. The real needs here is stand. Right now, they not feel secure.
You said their most need is what? How do you call it? Is that stand or what?
It's stand. Right now, they need stand.
Oh, tent.
Yeah.
Oh, so that they will not sleep outside. They want something to sleep under. Now, I want to believe everybody is in shock because this has not happened to their country for a long time. And when you talk to them, what do they think about what has happened to them?
I was speaking with a young man who grew up here. He said to me it was very complicated to spend night because in the night there is no electricity here. It's very complicated for them because it's the first time they see the friends and the mother and the father died before them.
Emmanuel Victor Ingapila is a freelance journalist. He was speaking with us from the village of Moulay Ibrahim, about 31 miles from Marrakech City. Gabon's transitional justice minister says he's ready to carry out what he calls the heavy responsibilities that come with his appointment. On Saturday, the new prime minister, Raymond Ndong Sima, named a 26-member transitional government that will ultimately lead Gabon to democratic rule. The new government comprises ministers from the Ali Bongo administration, military officers, the opposition, and civil society. The new transitional justice minister is Paul Marie Ganju from the National Union Party. He tells me that part of his responsibility will include reorganizing the Ministry of Justice, including negotiating an end to the six-month-old magistrate and lawyer strike for better salaries and working conditions.
Well, it's a heavy responsibility in that period of transition. I can realize that the president of the transition has placed on my person. I'm grateful of his choice of my person to be Minister of Justice. And I'm ready to take this charge and do the best for the country as the military has side power in this country to stop this bad electoral process we had, and also to put an end to the old Bongo regime. I think it's a new window that this country is opening for the future.
Exactly, because I remember talking with you as opposition person during the Bongo administration, and many things were happening in your country then. Is there going to be some accountability under your administration as the Minister of Justice or during the transition process? What are you going to be focusing on?
Well, first, I have to wait for the inauguration of the new position as minister. It should be taking place next week, Monday or Tuesday, I don't know. And then I'll be waiting for the feuille de route, like as we said in French.
The marching orders.
The marching orders from the president. And we have the responsibility to reorganize the Justice Department as we have a strike in this department for 6 months. You know, 6 months of strike from the magistrate. And we have to put an end to this strike and try to find the solution of the social problem and the organizational problem they wanted to solve with the government. So our responsibility is to will be to dialogue with the magistrate and also the lawyers. Plenty of things to do, plenty of responsibility, plenty of problem. But we are ready to work and try to find solution to them, those problems.
You said the magistrates were on strike. Why were they on strike?
Well, because they asked the government, I mean the old government, to change the work condition of the magistrate, to recognize that those magistrates, they have plenty of work. They wanted to have a better condition, better salaries, better better equipment, a new justice palace. Many things they want for themselves, and we are working on it.
Mr. New Justice Minister, thank you so much again. A pleasure to speak with you, and good luck on the job.
Thank you, Jim.
That was Paul Marie Ganju, Gabon's new transitional justice minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Libreville. Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown, became a militarized zone over the weekend as military and police personnel and vehicles could be seen patrolling the streets. They have also set up checkpoints during the night. This follows rumors of a planned protest today, Monday. The main opposition has rejected the country's June 24 elections due to alleged irregularities. Some international observers, including the United States and the European Union, have also raised concerns about irregularities in the official tallying of the results. Information Minister Cherna Ba tells me that given Sierra Leone's history of violence, the security forces do not want to take chances.
There's the presence of our security forces to do two things. One, it's civic engagement, continuing to reassure the people of our country, especially in our city, that the state security apparatus is under full and complete control, that they have nothing to be worried about. And it's also to continue to engage the citizens on the steps that the citizens can take to enhance our security. This is definitely connected to, we've had calls for violence, calls by unidentified individuals for citizens to step out into the streets and essentially wreak havoc. And so because of our experience in the past, our state apparatus is taking those calls very seriously and making sure that the people know that those calls are being taken seriously, but nobody has anything to be worried about.
Mr. Minister, I think I might have seen also the social media post about a planned demonstration, but the security forces, don't you think that frightens the citizens more than the planned demonstration?
No. I think, as I said, it's the nature of the engagement. First, you have to keep in mind that we have a history here just about a year ago when some forces stepped out without authorization on named forces and they wreaked some untold suffering on poor and innocent citizens of our country. So the first and foremost thing that we have to do as a state is to reassure our citizens that this time we take any calls of such nature extremely seriously and that our security forces are under full and complete control. So instead of threatening citizens, the essence of this is to reassure our citizens.
So this is not to stop people from protesting or demonstrating?
Well, there is a very clear legal process for folks to engage in any sort of peaceful protest in this country. And you have to be a recognized body. You have to at least seek clearance from the state security forces. What we know is that nobody has reached out and asked for that. We're democratic states. If you reach out, the police will do the assessment and they will grant you and they will make sure that it's controlled. But what we cannot, as a state, tolerate is unnamed individuals purporting to use social media to instigate violence in our country. That is what the security forces are clear. They will not tolerate.
Chana Ba is Sierra Leone's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, September 11. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. More than 250 million Africans are hungry, according to the African Union, as food prices in Africa continue to surge. Member states say resilience strategies are needed to combat food insecurity. Moses Javier Rimana reports.
Scores of agriculture stakeholders and African presidents attended on Friday the Africa Food System Forum Summit in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. The leaders, including Kenyan President William Ruto, called on member states to engage youth in agriculture as part of the strategies to build resilience in the continent.
How do we increase productivity? How do we bring youth into the equation? I think those two issues, you know, encapsulates what I think should inform our thinking going forward. The provision of fertilizer and seed is very important. It must be accessible, it must be affordable, and it must be available.
According to the African Union, more than 250 million Africans are hungry. Despite African countries having signed the Malabo Declaration that calls for 10% of countries' annual budget to be appropriated to agriculture, though only a few have complied. Tanzania's President Samia Suluhu Hassan says that her country has increased the budget for agriculture significantly.
Kibaya zaidi, wapo wanaokufa kwa kukosa chakula. Hii ni aibu.
She says that the worst thing is that there are people dying of hunger and that it is a shame and unacceptable to be happening on the African continent. Nados Bekele Thomas is the chief executive officer of the African Union Development Agency.
Building resilient and inclusive food system for our continent is the most pressing challenge, with the world still emerging from the devastation of the COVID pandemic and the ongoing Ukraine-Russia war. Hunger and malnutrition on our continent is set to worsen in the coming years.
In efforts to fight hunger in the continent, African heads of state are now exploring preferential treatment for farmers with low interest rate loans and mechanization of the sector. Calls are continuing for decisive strategies and actions to rebuild the food system after multiple crises and shocks in Africa. According to the World Bank, domestic food price inflation remains high around the world. 79% of lower middle-income countries are experiencing double-digit inflation, and the most affected countries are in Africa. For VOA Africa, I'm Moses Havyarimana.
Peace Corps volunteers have started returning to Malawi 3 years after being evacuated to the United States because of a COVID-19 pandemic. The U.S. Embassy in Malawi says in a statement that the first group returned last month, August, and that another is expected in the country this month. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
There were slightly over 100 Peace Corps volunteers in Malawi before the pandemic who were serving in various sectors, including education, health, and environment. However, all of them were evacuated in March 2020 because of COVID-19 before Malawi recorded its first 3 cases of COVID-19 on April 2 of that year. Namita Biggins is the public affairs officer for the U.S. Embassy in Malawi. She told VOA via a messaging app that the volunteers are now returning.
As of September 6, 2023, there are 8 volunteers in training. Currently, they are focused on building various competencies necessary for effective service, including learning Chichewa, intercultural engagement, and technical skills. In the coming days, we are expecting 4 Peace Corps response volunteers. They will be in Malawi for 1 year, working closely with a partner organization.
Biggins says Malawi is currently among 57 countries that again have Peace Corps volunteers on the ground.
Volunteers work in health, education, and environment sectors and may do activities such as HIV and malaria prevention, teaching English, and permagardening. They work closely with their assigned communities and local counterparts to identify the needs and priorities of their communities as they design projects and implement these activities.
Maziko Matemba is the ambassador for community health in Malawi. He says the return of Peace Corps volunteers confirms strides the country has achieved in fighting COVID-19.
Malawi is one of the about 17 countries globally which have been earmarked as countries where they need to make sure that when emergencies like COVID comes, it has to be contained and managed. So this is a welcome news.
Malawi announced last month that the disease is no longer a public health emergency of international concern. Matemba says the return of Peace Corps should help Malawi learn how other countries worked to combat the pandemic. For VOA Africa, I am Lamek Masina in Blantyre, Malawi.
The late Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi of South Africa is being described as the last of the Bantustan leaders who was obsessed with his place in history during the apartheid government and after. Buthelezi, the transitional prime minister of the Zulu monarch and the nation and founder of the Inkatha Freedom Fighter Party, passed away Saturday at age 95. Professor Sipo Sipe is the former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand.
I think the chief had a very long life. He died at 95. Not many South African people live up to 95, so he has had a very good innings. And his passing brings to an end an era, and he's the last of the so-called Bantustan leaders. And he was mired in controversy, especially early on in his life. This is a man who used to be a member of the African National Congress, who used to consort with the likes of, say, Albert Luthuli, Nelson Mandela, Oliver Tambo, etc. But he was obsessed with having a place in history. So when the ANC was banned, he saw an opportunity. And unfortunately, he began to dictate the direction that the ANC had not anticipated. Early on, the ANC had no problem with his formation in Inkatha. But later, he came out to be seen as a puppet of the apartheid regime. And during that time, when the struggle was intensifying and when the repression was intensifying, he was a person who was feted and received by world leaders that were sympathetic to apartheid. In that sense, the ANC and the other liberation movement and also people in the township began to see him as simply a sellout, the one who sells his own people. But it was Mandela's commitment to reconciliation among African people that when he came out of prison, he sort of reached out to people like Buthelezi and many others in a way that began to sanitize the role that he had played. So when Mandela sought his audience and preached the idea of reconciliation, he was willing to forgive or to say, let the bygones be bygones, and let's find and work together towards building a new country, a new nation.
Professor, in the official circles of South Africa, how is the late Buthelezi being remembered?
In the official circle, they remember him as the man of reason and a wise one.
Professor Sipho Sipe is a political analyst and former Deputy Vice Chancellor for Institutional Support at the University of Zululand. He was speaking with us from Johannesburg. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with results from the matches played in the final round of qualifiers for the Africa Cup of Nations Cote d'Ivoire 2023. Victor Osimhen grabbed a hat-trick as Nigeria's Super Eagles signed off their Africa Cup of Nations qualifying campaign with a 6-0 win over Sao Tome on Sunday. Elsewhere, Togo produced a stunning fight back to defeat Cape Verde 3-2 in their final Africa Cup of Nations qualifier on Sunday. The Sparrowhawks, already eliminated, trailed 2-0 after goals from Kevin Pina and Gilson Benchmore put Cape Verde in control. In the meantime, host of next year's Africa Cup of Nations Cote d'Ivoire concluded their last day of the tournament qualifiers with a clinical display that saw them edge Lesotho at a packed Laurent Poco Stadium in San Pedro. The only goal scored in the game by Ivory Coast midfield workhorse Ibrahim Sangare in the 16th minute from the edge of the area was enough to see next year's Total Africa Cup of Nations host secure a confidence-boosting win in front of their supporters. Staying with the AFCON qualifier, CAF has agreed to postpone the Africa Cup of Nations Cote d'Ivoire 2023 qualifier match between Morocco and Liberia following the earthquake in Morocco, which resulted in more than 1,200 people losing their lives and hundreds injured. The match was initially scheduled to take place on Saturday, the 9th of September in Agadir, Morocco. CAF will announce a new date and details regarding the match in due course. Away from football news now, Sean Strickland defeated Nigerian-born Israel Adesanya to become the new UFC middleweight champion of the world, with all judges scoring the fight in his favor at the Kudos Park Arena in Sydney, Australia on Sunday. A first-round knockdown by the American was the highlight of the fight that went the whole five rounds. All three judges scored the fight 49-46 for the American and the new middleweight world champion Strickland. He did it with non-stop pressure and steady upright boxing, never once attempting a grapple. This is Adesanya's third loss, bringing his record to 24-3.
Win or lose, I wasn't going to say much anyway, but right now I lost tonight to the better man on the night, and I just want to go with be with people who care about me, my team.
In athletics, Agnes Ngechich of Kenya broke the women-only world 10-kilometer record by clocking 29 minutes 24 seconds at the World Athletics Elite Labor Road Race in Brasov, Romania, on Sunday. Ngechich covered the initial 5 kilometers in 14 minutes 25 seconds, 4 seconds faster than the previous world record for that distance. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, September 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Botting, Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.